Today, hard truths ahead for the endless rally as US CEO Trump fires. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analysis, one of the posts covering finance and property news. This is our weekly market update, where we start in the US, across to Europe and Asia, and then in Australia, covering commodities and crypto along the way. At one level, markets have continued to chug higher, touching records earlier in the week, supported by the AI boom, hopes for US rate cuts, and the expectation that tariffs will stick at close to current, if now elevated, levels. Though, by Friday, dark clouds were on the horizon. The MSCI Global Index was down 0.39% across the week, thanks to a 0.5% fall on Friday. The Stoxx 600 was down 1.99% across the week. The S&P 500 dropped 0.64% on Friday, but was down just 0.1% across the week, while the Nasdaq fell more than 1%, and the S&P 500 Technology Index fell 1.6% on Friday. The Dow slid from recent highs. The ASX 200 lost 0.1% on Friday, but closed up 2.6% for the month after an increase of 0.1% across the week. But below the surface, there are questions to be asked. Bank of America's Global Risk Love Indicator has reached the 93rd percentile of its historical range since 1987, signaling early signs of market euphoria, according to a recent report. Primarily driven by low cash levels, reduced volatility measures, tightened credit spreads, and a decreased put-call ratio, suggesting investors may be taking on more risk than usual in current market conditions. And talking of risk, the US money supply hit a record $22.1 trillion in July, while total US public debt rose again to $37.283 trillion, meaning a greater share of taxpayer funds needs to go to pay interest. And we also note that longer-term bond yields continue to steepen, signalling risk and inflation concerns ahead, while markets are being driven slavishly by more passive funds tracking the market. In the US, it is close now to 60%. That means movements in stocks, up or down, will be magnified. And then we have to talk about Trump, who appears to see himself not so much as an American president, but as America's chief executive, with the various branches of government, law enforcement, the bureaucracy, the Fed, under his direction. In isolation, Trump's fights with universities such as Harvard, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and apparently crime-ridden cities like Washington, D.C. and Chicago look, well, like little episodes of chaos. But if you zoom out, you can see that the apparent willingness of Trump to break down the historical barriers between the White House and these institutions are becoming clearer. "I have the right to do anything I want to do," Trump said on Monday. "I'm the President of the United States." As financial markets spent the week fretting about what the erosion of the Fed's independence might mean, state intervention in the economy reached a level, well, unmanageable this time last year. The Trump administration on Friday ended the so-called de minimis exemption for packages of imports less than $800, which has fueled a surge in shipments from global sellers to the US consumer. According to US data, around 73% of de minimis packages entered the US come from China in 2024. Yet the courts are getting involved, with the US Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit on Friday upholding an earlier ruling by the Court of International Trade that Trump wrongfully invoked the law to hit nations across the globe with steep tariffs. The statute bestows significant authority on the president to undertake a number of actions in response to a declared national emergency, but none of those actions explicitly include the power to impose tariffs, duties, or the like, or the power to tax, the court said. The case has been expected to go to the Supreme Court for a final ruling. The administration could now turn to the justices, who have largely backed the president on other matters, but the White House could also let the Court of International Trade revisit the matter first. "All tariffs are still in effect," Trump said in a post on Truth Social shortly after the decision was issued. "Today, a highly partisan appeals court incorrectly said that our tariffs should be removed. But they know that the United States of America will win in the end, the president said. If these tariffs ever went away, it would be a total disaster for the country. Elsewhere, a federal judge said on Friday that he would set an expedited briefing schedule in Lisa Cook's bid to temporarily block Trump from firing her from the Fed while she pursues a lawsuit that says he has no valid reason to remove her. Elsewhere, the economic data continues to confuse, with the revised GDP showing the US growing at a 3.3% clip in the second quarter, with the consumer still carrying the torch despite tariffs, import distortions, and ongoing whispers of a slowdown. But some of this was thanks to the deflator that they used, which lifted the GDP higher. Nevertheless, the Atlanta Fed is now projecting that the third quarter GDP will be plus 3.5%. That's a massive expansion. And on those hot figures, it appears the US economy is running hot, 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 as the American household refuses to relinquish the oars, even as the tides grow choppier. Jobless claims, too, pointed to employers gripping their workers tightly, perhaps out of loyalty, perhaps out of fears they won't easily find replacements. Whatever the reason, the labour keel still holds steady. So you have to ask the question, why would the Fed cut at all on those numbers? US consumer spending increased by the most in 4 months in July, while services inflation picked up, but economists do not believe the signs of strong domestic demand will prevent the Federal Reserve from cutting interest rates next month against a backdrop of softening labour market conditions and, of course, that political pressure from the White House. The report from the Commerce Department on Friday showed mild price pressures from tariffs on imports. Its personal consumption expenditure price index, the PCE, rose 0.2% in July versus an unrevised 0.3% increase in June, and in line with expectations. In the 12 months through to July, the PCE inflation was 2.6% higher after climbing 2.6% in June. If you strip out the volatile food and energy components, the so-called core PCE price index increased 0.3% last month. That followed a 0.3% rise in core inflation in June. So traders are now pricing in an 89% odds of a cut by the Federal Reserve next month, up from 84% before that data came out. Traders had increased bets on more cuts after Fed Chair Jerome Powell last Friday adopted an unexpectedly dovish tone. And Fed Governor Christopher Waller said on Thursday that he wanted to start cutting interest rates next month and fully expects more rate cuts to follow to bring the Fed's policy rate closer to a neutral setting. In Treasuries, long-dated yields edged higher as traders closed positions ahead of the upcoming long weekend and repositioned for month-end. The yield on the benchmark US 10-year note rose 1.6 basis points to 4.23%. And the two-year note rose 1.6 basis points on the day to 3.623%. It's actually fallen 30 basis points this month, the most in a year. The yield steepener, you can see there in action. Meanwhile, US stocks fell on Friday, with technology shares, including Dell Technologies, which dropped 8.9%, after it reported results late on Thursday that included high manufacturing costs for artificial intelligence-optimized servers. Other AI-related shares fell in the broader tech sell-off, including Broadcom, down 3.6%, and Nvidia, who had reported earlier in the week, down another 3.3%. Nvidia delivered strong quarterly results after the market closed on Wednesday, with the chip designer and AI bellwether reporting a beat to analyst estimates and forecasting third-quarter revenue that was higher than Wall Street estimates. However, a miss on data center revenue and questions over China's forecast cause investors to question the company's elevated valuation, resulting in its shares sliding in after-hours trading. The stock dip removed about $110 billion from Nvidia's $4.4 trillion market cap after the results. But it's worth noting Nvidia trades at less than 33 times projected profits as at Thursday's close, down from 35 3 weeks ago. The Nasdaq 100 was priced at 27 times, and there are 30 companies in that 100-member index with higher valuations than Nvidia, including Starbucks and Netflix. At nearly 8% of the S&P, though, Nvidia isn't just another passenger. It's the axle of the current rally. And even if the forecast lacked fireworks, the omission of China sales in its outlook leaves an unpriced kicker dangling somewhere out there like bait. If Washington and Beijing do strike a deal, the numbers could fatten quickly, reminding us that this ship is still loaded with powder below deck. US shares in Alibaba soared 13%, and are among the most traded on Wall Street, after the Chinese company reported stronger than expected quarterly growth in its cloud computing business, driven by AI-related demand. As well, the Wall Street Journal reported that Alibaba has developed a new AI chip. The Russell 2000 index of smaller companies dipped 0.5%, but it's logged a 7% gain in August. For the month, the S&P 500 rose 1.9%, the Dow rose 3.2%, and the Nasdaq added 1.6%. And a reminder that US financial markets will be closed for the Labor Day holiday on Monday. The volatility index was still well down at 15.38. The euro was last up 0.11% at 1.1686. The dollar index, which measures the greenback against a basket of currencies, fell just a little to 97.86. Gold surpassed the euro last year to become the world's second largest reserve asset among global central banks. And gold was up this week, with gold futures up more than 3% across the week to $3,531.30, touching new highs. Oil prices, though, were lower. US crude fell to $64.01 a barrel, and Brent declined just a little to $67.47. As traders looked towards weaker demand in the US, the world's largest oil market, and a boost in supply this autumn from OPEC and its allies, collectively known as OPEC Plus, as the group has accelerated output hikes to regain market share, raising the supply outlook. The US summer driving season ends on Monday's Labor Day holiday, signaling the end of the highest demand period in the US, which is the largest fuel market. Investors are also watching for India's response to pressure from the US to stop buying Russian oil after Trump doubled tariffs on imports from India to as much as 50% on Wednesday. So far, though, India has defied the US, and Russian oil exports to India are set to rise in September, according to traders. European shares closed lower, hitting their lowest in over 2 weeks, weighed down by British banks. The DAX index in Germany dropped 0.5%, the CAC 40 in France slipped 0.8%, and the FTSE 100 in London fell 0.3%. Data released earlier on Friday showed that French consumer prices rose slightly less than anticipated in August, with the country's harmonized inflation rate coming in at up 0.8% year on year in August, down from a 0.9% rise in July. And Spain's European Union harmonized 12-month inflation rate remained at 2.7% in August from the period through to July. The European Central Bank left its key rate at 2% at its July meeting, and data since has confirmed the Eurozone economy was holding up while inflation hovered at the ECB's 2% target. ECB policymakers are widely expected to hold rates unchanged again in September, but the minutes from the July meeting showed that they were divided on whether inflation was more likely to come in higher or lower moving forward. There was some speculation of a rate rise next year as a result. In the European corporate sector, Rémy Cointreau raised the low end of its annual guidance after the US and European Union agreed to cut planned tariffs on European wines and spirits in half, easing pressure on the French cognac makers' earnings. The revised trade agreement, effective 1 August, set tariffs at 15%, down from the initially proposed 30%. London equities fell on Friday, dragged down by heavyweight banking stocks, after a think tank recommended a new tax on lenders as a possible way for Finance Minister Rachel Reeves to raise revenue. The Institute of Public Policy Research said Reeves should use her autumn budget to tax banks on the billions of pounds they receive in interest from the Bank of England on reserves held at the central bank. The UK stock market ended the week on a sour note amid suggestions that the government could help fill its fiscal hole with a new tax on the banking sector, said Russ Mould, investment director at AJ Bell. Some of the biggest names in the FTSE 100 are lenders, so if they're out of favour, it acts as a drag on the whole UK blue chip index. Banking stocks retreated 1.9%, the worst performing sector, and NatWest was down 4.8%. Luxury fashion group Burberry fell 2.4%, weighing on the mid-cap personal goods index, and Watches of Switzerland was also down about 2%. France's CAC 40 has shed 3.3% across the week, lagging regional peers on concerns over a potential collapse of Prime Minister François Bayrou's government next month. In September, the ECB is still expected to keep rates on hold, mirroring its July meeting after delivering 8 rate cuts since the middle of 2024. And Germany's Friedrich Merz dismissed the possibility of a summit between Russia and Ukraine, casting doubt on any short-term resolution of the war. On the economic front, Rheinmetall's billion-euro investment in Bulgarian defence production marks a strategic shift in the bloc's rearmament push. While investors kept a wary eye on Polish and Moldovan political developments, with leadership instability and pro-Russia influence concerns on the rise. Meanwhile, energy prices inched higher after the latest Russian attacks on Kiev, stoking fears of further geopolitical disruption to oil supply chains. Asian stocks were a mixed bag on Friday, with Chinese shares extending their stellar performance through August and remaining at recent multi-year peaks, while Japan's Nikkei 225 retreated on the swathe of negative economic readings. China's Shanghai Shenzhen CSI 300 rose 0.7% to a three-year high, while the Shanghai Composite Index rose 0.4% and was just below a 10-year peak. Hong Kong's Hang Seng was up 0.7% and was close to a recent four-year high. Mainland Chinese stocks vastly outperformed their regional peers in August, with the CSI 300 up 10.3% over the month, while the Shanghai Composite was up 8.1%. Chinese markets were encouraged by increasing efforts by Beijing to promote local chip production, while signs of continued softness in the economy ramped up bets that the government will dole out even more stimulus measures. A major rally in Chinese chip-making stocks was seen cooling a little bit on Friday, with artificial intelligence chips maker Cambricon Technologies falling 5%, but after rallying to record highs earlier in the week. The stock had doubled in value in August and was up 20% over the week, after Nvidia expressed more doubts over its Chinese sales, driving up bets on more local chip makers. Semiconductor Manufacturing International Corp and Hua Kong Semiconductor Limited fell 2.2% and 5% in Hong Kong trading, respectively. The Hang Seng lagged with a modest 1.6% gain in August as the technology sell down in the latter half of the month weighed. China Evergrande Group was finally kicked off the Hong Kong Stock Exchange on Monday, in one of the largest delistings by market value and volume in recent years, and marked an end to what's been a tumultuous boom and bust saga for its investors. Trading in shares in the world's most indebted developer, with more than $300 billion in liabilities, has been suspended since a court order on January 29th that the company be liquidated after defaulting on its debts and failing to come up with a reorganization plan. That paved the way for Evergrande's delisting on Monday. Under the exchange's rules, Evergrande is unlikely to be the last to meet such a fate, as the sector, which was hit by an unprecedented debt crisis in 2021, continues to be hobbled by a liquidity squeeze and the lack of home buyer demand, according to analysts. Next week, Chinese Purchasing Managers Index data of August is set to shed more light on the world's second largest economy and could factor into expectations of more stimulus. Japan's Nikkei 225 fell 0.4%, while the TOPIX index shed 0.5% on Friday. Both indices were trading up around 4-5% in August, having hit a series of record highs earlier in the month. But the swathe of negative economic readings on Friday did weigh. Japanese industrial production shrank more than expected in July, while retail sales data for the month was also underwhelming, up just 0.3%, compared with the 1.5% that was anticipated, and it fell from 1.9% in June. Adding to uncertainty over the economy, Tokyo Consumer Price Index data for August showed inflation in Japan's capital eased as expected, but the core inflation remained sticky and above the Bank of Japan's 2% annual target, keeping bets on more interest rate hikes by the Bank of Japan largely in play. Japan long bonds were still up above 3%. That's another signal from the bond steepening. Among broader Asian markets, South Korea's KOSPI fell 0.2% as mixed earnings from Nvidia and its peers kept investors cautious towards tech and AI. The KOSPI also traded down 1.7% for August. India's Nifty 50 fell 0.3% and is nursing a 1.4% loss in August following the implementation of 50% tariffs by the US on a wide range of Indian imports. In response, Indian authorities are reportedly exploring mitigation measures, including export diversification, export sector financial support, and engaging with industry to assess economic fallout. The Reserve Bank of India also said it's monitoring the situation closely to assess broader economic implications. The Australian share market fell slightly on Friday, but held for a fifth consecutive month as investors moved to take profits as a volatile earnings season came to an end. The ASX 200 lost 0.1% to 8,973, but closed up 2.6% for the month, after an increase of 0.1% for the week, a fourth straight week of gains. The benchmark is now up more than 25% from its April lows. Real estate saw broad falls to be the worst of the five sectors that slumped, as Stockland fell 1.4% to $6.19. Banks weighed as well, as Commonwealth Bank dropped 1.2% to $170.81, and Westpac by 1.1% to $38.55. Tech was the stronger sector, as Next DC roared 17.4% up to $16.50 as markets liked capital efficiency plans that removed near-term equity raise concerns. In corporate news, Virgin Australia fell 1.2% to $3.45 on concerns it might not beat analyst earnings estimates this year, even as annual earnings rose 28% in 2025. Harvey Norman soared 10.4% to $6.82, after its profits rose 39% to $751.1 million, well above market expectations. Conveyancer PEXA plunged 8.6% to $15.46 as its $41 million profit came in 11% below consensus. Austell surged 14.5% to $7.73 amid a record order pipeline and a strategic shipbuilding agreement with the federal government. Mesoblast tumbled 9.5% to $2.18 as its full-year loss widened to $102.1 million US dollars. Cetaphil gained 5% to 31.5 cents as it placed an increased emphasis on profitability this financial year as it deals with the impacts of US tariffs, and Bubs Australia rose 9% to 18 cents after its first statutory profit after tax of $5.5 million in the past year. Investors are increasingly pessimistic about earnings at the country's largest listed companies after a month of profit reporting that had blue chip names from CSL to Woolworths suffer big share price falls as they warned of little growth and significant economic challenges in key markets. A survey of brokers showed they downgraded earnings expectations for the new financial year at 24 of the 100 largest ASX listed companies and upgraded them for just 14. It was a similar outlook for smaller companies too. Poor results at well-known companies have, however, obscured a better-than-expected results more broadly for the ASX's largest 100 companies, according to figures published by Barrenjoey. Among the biggest falls were James Hardie, which missed expectations by a wide mark and warned that sales at its newly acquired decking and pergola business, AZEK, in the US was not going well. And CSL, which announced a poorly received plan to demerge its vaccines division. James Hardie's one-day fall of nearly 30% was the worst decline since 1973, and CSL shares had their worst single day since the company was listed in 1999. Plumbing and taps business Reece slumped after it warned of weakness in Victoria, as well as in the US, and logistics software giant WiseTech Global's shares fell 12% this week after undergoing revenues. Woolworths shares lost 14.7% in their heaviest sell-off since 1994 after the retailer said sales were slipping behind Coles. The Aussie long bond was at 5.037, while the two-year stood at 3.336%. The Aussie was at 65.4 US cents and 48.46 UK pence. Finally, in crypto, Bitcoin fell back to 108,790 US, and it's fallen more than 10% from its August record peak above 124,000. Bitcoin often comes under pressure during periods of heightened macroeconomic and political uncertainty, despite being promoted by some investors as a hedge. American Bitcoin, a Bitcoin mining company backed by Donald Trump's sons Eric and Donald Jr., aims to start trading on the NASDAQ in early September 2025 via a reverse merger with Griffin Digital Mining, according to a Reuters report. Trump's sons and the firm's largest investor, Hut 8, collectively control about 98% of the firm, the report said. And altcoins were largely down on Friday, tracking the declines in the world's largest cryptocurrency. World number two, Ethereum, fell over 6%. World number three, crypto XRP, declined 5.5% to $2.84. And Solana lost 1.4%. Hyperscale Data stock tumbled 9.9% after the diversified holding company announced a new at-the-market equity offering program for up to $125 million in common stock. The company disclosed that it plans to sell shares through Wilson Davis & Co., which will act as the sales agent for transactions deemed to be at-the-market offerings. These sales will be conducted through ordinary brokers transacting on the New York Stock Exchange, American Exchange, on the NYSE American Exchange, or at prevailing market prices. Hyperscale Data intends to use the majority of any net proceeds to acquire Bitcoin and further develop its Michigan data facility. A smaller proportion will be allocated to acquiring XRP, the digital asset developed by Ripple Labs, as well as for working capital and general corporate purposes, which may include debt repayment or stock repurchases. The announcement indicates that management will have broad discretion regarding the time and application of net proceeds, as the company cannot predict with certainty all of the particular uses for the funds raised through this offering. At-the-market offerings typically allow companies to raise capital by selling newly issued shares into the market at current trading prices, providing flexibility but potentially diluting existing shareholders' ownership stakes, which likely contributed to today's negative stock reaction. And El Salvador, the first country to make Bitcoin legal tender, will move its reserves of the popular cryptocurrency to multiple new addresses from the single address it had previously used in order to improve security, it said on Friday. The country's national Bitcoin office said on X, each address will hold up to 500 Bitcoins, and that a public dashboard would make the full balance across those addresses transparent to the public. The Central American nation has for years been consolidating its Bitcoin position. As at Friday, it held around $682 million worth in the volatile cryptocurrency. So as we head into the northern autumn, with risk signals flashing and the thought that September and October are traditionally weaker months for the market, it may boil down to whether the US CEO Trump can fire his way to victory, or whether the fallout will ultimately crash global markets as the US confusion builds. Who knows? I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.